using next-generation sequencing for tagging stress-resistance genes for energy cane. There's a pointer here if you want it. You can speak into the microphone.
So, good morning. Thank you. I guess I have to start saying that it's an honor to be here. I want to thank the organizing committee to give me the chance to share the work that we did with you guys. So, as I'm a plant breeder, so as such, what I'm going to try to do today is give you one way to use this technology to assist breeding. So what I'm going to do is make a brief introduction on what is Saccharum spontaneum, or also known as a wild cane, and why we chose to work with these species. Then I'm going to mention the cold stress test that we did. They briefly show the next generation sequence workflow. And then, after we got the results, we went a little further and did a proof of concept. And we realized we have to go after promoters. And also, I'm going to finish telling you our future plan, how we see this going beyond. So, Saccharum spontaneum. Every single commercial sugarcane today in the world, be it in Brazil, Australia, in U.S., you name it, has Saccharum spontaneum on their background, between 15 and 25% of their chromatin. It's one of the ancestors, wild ancestors of sugarcane. And it's very robust and has a number of advantages. It has the widest distribution among all saccharum species. You can find it in all the way from sea level all the way to 2,700 meters altitude in the Himalayas, and also in the mountains of Japan, where they do produce sugar. And also from 8 degrees south all the way to 4 degrees north. Japan, Northeast Africa, India, you name it. And being so, have such a wide distribution, the species has a big pool of genes. And it has it's the biggest potential genetic variation for traits like stress. It survives drought, water logging, salt, tropical heat, and even winter snow. And with all this adaptation to all this stress, it has the major source of polymorphism. But it's not perfect. It has susceptibility to smut. It's a very common and important economic disease, the fungus in sugarcane, and also flowers. For sugar production, flowering is very limiting because it decreases the yield and sugar content. But for bioenergy, I'm not sure how important that is. Maybe even be a plus, because what it does is decrease the moisture. And you don't want to high water anyways, so it may not be a bad idea for bioenergy. So being such a wide distribution, being so robust and so adapted to many things, very aggressive, this species is considered a noxious weed in a number of countries, including here in the U.S. So it took me almost, you have to have a special permit from the USDA. And it took me almost a year to get a permit. And among the requirements that I have to do is to plant the plants on concrete slabs, and also have this advice here, the sign telling that this is quarantine material from the USDA. It's against the law to have it. And they give you the permit to you as a person. If I leave Texas A&M, they have to trash everything or apply for another permit. So it is. But then you may think, why go to so much trouble to invest in such a species? Oh yeah, another requirement is once you use for flowering or for what you do, you have to destroy it, either autoclave or burn. And we have 120 lines of those. We have to have a huge autoclave, so we decide to build our own barbecue pit. And we have to burn everything after we harvest, because it helps to propagate vegetatively beyond. Even after flowering, it also, if you cut and dump it, you will germinate from the lateral bud, so we have to destroy the whole thing. Just to give you an idea of the importance of this material, recently EPA determined that a minimum of 75% total cellulosic content for the feedstock to be considered a cellulosic feedstock. And just to give you an idea, out of 14 breeding lines that we had in my breeding program, we did the composition analysis cell wall, and out of 14, 11 of those got the minimum requirement. And some going all the way to 84%. The red one over there is the commercial sugarcane. Just to give you an idea, it has sugarcane has around 60% cellulosic content. So in addition to this high fiber content, hulls produce much more biomass than sugarcane. So it's very promising. Now, this one example, this is one of the lines from my program in South Texas. And it has productivity. This data is from the tropics, from Brazil. It can produce all the way to 100 tons per hectare. The genetic improvement is 5%. Sugarcane is 1.1 per year. And so it's much faster to improve. Soil requirement is low, resistance to most diseases. In sugarcane, usually people get five crops. It's a perennial crop, so you can harvest and let it regrow. After five crops, on average, you have to plow it out because the yield goes down. In the U.S., people harvest three to four times at most. So energy cane can go all the way to 10 cycles without having to replant again. And because it's vegetatively propagated, you plant one, from one cane, you plant you have to grow the seed to expand the area. So here in the U.S., the factor is 1 to 5. So we plant 1 acre, from that acre, we can plant another 5 acres. In Brazil, 1 to 10. Energy cane is 1 to 50. So it produces much more biomass. And as my friend says in Brazil, José Bresciani, has the fitness to be planting across the 32 million hectares of devastated area across Brazil. But as you know, being tropical, sugarcane is very susceptible to cold. And the way I see it as a plant breeder is a big challenge. If you could bring this species with this all these attributes and make it adapted to the U.S., that would make a big difference. But like I said, being a tropical sugarcane doesn't like cold. It does those cholotic marks. If it's too cold, it goes to necrotic. And just one picture we took in South Texas, we got 2 inches of snow. You can tell that everything, this is Miscanthus sinensis. Everything here is commercial cane. You can see that it kills the whole aerial cord. So it can't tolerate much cold. Now, this is the TOS05-5, the genotype that we chose to work with. It doesn't look like sugarcane at all. As you see, it's very wild. And we count the chromosome, there's 78 chromosomes on this one here, so it's an octoploid. So what we did, we took the commercial sugarcane and this Saccharum spontaneum and exposed the two genotypes to cold stress around 20 hours at 1.5 degrees centigrade. Then extract the RNA, expose the same plants to 16 hours of freezing, -5 degrees centigrade, extract the RNA again, and then did the CNA library and did the DNA sequencing. And then we did the gene expression profile. So as you know, RNA-seq is a very powerful technique that can be used for large-scale expression profile or to build the transcriptome. And we did this technique at Texas A&M, the Genomic Center, Texas A&M College Station. They have a Illumina HiSeq there. And the hardware we use was a Mach Pro, and we use the CLC software from the Genomic Workbench. And our sequencing read was a single read. As you know, it's short reads, 100 BP long. So after we trimmed and mapped the reference genes, we did a comparison of gene expression values across genotypes. So first we compare sugarcane before and after chilling. Then we compare the Saccharum spontaneum before and after chilling. And finally, we compare after chilling the two species to see what there was a difference in the gene expression. And to identify, to consider our differential expressor, we consider the criteria was at least 2 times fold increase in expression after the chilling. So after running the data, we got almost 15 million reads. And we look at the annotation, the most common activity was the binding, followed by a catalytic and transport. The genes they were considered differentially expressed. And after all those nearly 500 genes, we zoomed in 7 that were most, showed the biggest expression, differential expression. And from those 7, we zoomed in 2 of them. And we just published this paper recently, most of this data, and a close one. If you want to go get more detail, you can find it there. But just to give you an idea, this particular is an aquaporin gene. This particular one, after half an hour, it went all the way to almost 30 times fold increase expression. And then after 1 hour, almost 35 times increase. And stay overexpressed for 24 hours. So what we did, we wanted to make sure that this gene actually conferred a code resistance. So what we did a proof of concept. And we did a genetic modification of tobacco. And we contributed to our back library. Because for my surprise, for our surprise, the presence of the gene, those genes differentially expressed were present both in the white cane and the sugar cane. The difference was how fast and how intense they were expressed at the white cane. So that we realized they have to go after the promoter. The promoter is explaining the difference. So that we did the back library, and we identified some sequences that do have some promoter activities. And this is a work in progress. We decided to screen now the rest of our collection to see if other genotypes of the cyclospontaneous are code resistant. So we are now we're doing this like a cold chamber that we have. This is a commercial sugarcane. After 20, the same condition that we use, it kills the growing point, as you can see. And for my surprise, even this is a commercial energy cane released for USDA, HOMA 02113. He also died after the cold stress that we exposed. Oops. But for our surprise, these 2 of those lines of my collection, they didn't care, they didn't show any damage at all. So there's a good chance that those 2 plants are be even much higher, much more resistant to cold than the one that we used. The future plan is to continue screening the our germ plant collection, and then progress. We don't need to do any genetic modification. I did just for a proof of concept. We can cross with sugarcane and transfer easily with no public perception, and then do the cold stress with the F1 seedlings. Currently, we have nearly 3,000 genes, F1 genes, from cross we did in Hawaii in 2013. They are the first raccoon stage. And another almost 2,000 genes, F1 genes, that we did last year in Texas, in my farm. So we have nearly almost 15,000 F1 genes, potential energy cane. And now if we get funded, the goal is to do a GBS on those seedlings, or at least elect one of those parent crosses and try and tag the existing genes. Just want to acknowledge the governor's office. We provide the funding for this research. And my colleagues, Glaucia Suda from Brazil, she allowed to open the sugarcane genomic base, which made a big difference for us to assess the gene annotation. Chifumi Nagai from Hawaii and Zebre Sen from Brazil. But yeah, I hope I have questions for time, sure. For questions.
We have time for maybe a question.
So when you were mapping your spontaneous fragments back to the sugar, I assume you were the sugar cane reference genome, because of the different organisms, so what percentage of your fragments actually mapped back to the sugar cane genome?
I don't know that percentage, but I tell you this. Before we had access to the sugar cane back library, the genomic database from Brazil, we were trying to assess with sorghum, and the percentage was so low that we were kind of giving up, and then the Brazilian allowed us to do that, so that made a huge difference. So there was a big, because like I told you, those, in addition to be very close sugarcane cyclospontaneous, it is on the commercial sugarcane. So part of at least 25% of the commercial sugarcane that we have came from this species. So at least we have guaranteed 25% homology. But we have much more than that because some genes are very homologous to sugarcane.
Have you done any de novo assembly of your transcriptome yet?
No, not yet. We're looking forward to do that also. And like I said, maybe we have in our collection even cyclospontane that are even colder resistant than this one. And then we want to zoom in on those there. Because one thing I didn't say, just in addition to be cold resistant, it also confers resistance to this aquaporin gene, also confers resistance to drought and salt, as one might expect. So it is like a low input gene.
Great. All right, thanks again.
Thank you.